युनस्यादौ कुर्वन्नीताम्रतम्ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता कोर्स। वी कंप्लीटेड द थर्ड सेक्शन ऑफ द फर्स्ट चैप्टर, द फर्स्ट सेक्शन ऑफ द सेकंड चैप्टर। द फर्स्ट सेक्शन वाज अबाउट अर्जुना सरेंडर एंड इंक्वायरी, what is the true dharma for me. Second section was from 11 to 30, that was Krishna telling soul is indestructible, therefore fight. Then 31 to 37 was the section by wherein Krishna said that because you do your dharma as a kshatriya, then you will go to heaven and you will enjoy. So the compassion and the enjoyment arguments have been countered. Now Krishna will talk about the Arjuna's fear of sinful reactions, that fear. He'll address it by telling how, by working in Nishkam Karma Yoga, you can stay free from all sinful reactions. So let's look at that part, 2.38 onwards. Yeah. Sukadukhe same krutva labha labhau jaya jaya ततो युद्धाय युज्यस्व नैवं पापमवाप्स्यसि। सो सुख दुखे समे कृत्वा, बी इक्विपोइज्ड इन हैप्पीनेस एंड डिस्ट्रेस, लाभ लाभौ, लाभ गेन एंड लॉस, जय अजय, विक्ट्री एंड फेलियर, व्हाट इज द डिफरेंस बिटवीन द टू? नो, लाभ एंड अलाभ, लॉ प्रॉफिट एंड लॉस कैन मीन वेरियस एंडेवर्स। जय एंड विजय is also, you know, profits and gains are like transitional. During a battle, we can have gain sometimes, some loss sometimes. But jaya means eventual victory. Jaya jayo. Tato yuddha yujyasva. Be equipoised among all these things. Yuddha yujyasva. Fight for the sake of fighting. Naivam papam avapsyasi. Then you will gain no sinful reactions. So in 1.36, Arjuna had said, Papam eva ashraye dasman hatvaitana tataina. If I kill these aggressors, then I will get papa. So, naivam, so that was papam eva ashraye, I will get papa. But he's saying, naivam papam aapse. See, Krishna is responding over here. You will not get papa. How? Because you are working with detachment. You are fighting because it's your duty. You are not fighting for victory. So now, at this stage, Krishna seems to have almost contradicted himself. In the previous verse, he has said that if you win, you will gain heaven. If you win, you will get the earth. If you lose, you will get the heavens. So either way, you are gaining. And so Krishna had just now talked about the profit loss calculation and had said how practicing the karmakanda level of religion and therefore doing the kshatriya dharma of fighting would be best for him. So he had just now talked from a profit loss calculation point of view, and suddenly Krishna changes tack and says, don't think in terms of profit loss. Think in terms of doing your duty. Give up all calculations of profit and loss. Now this seems suddenly very, a sudden change. Not just a shift, but it's almost like a U-turn in thinking. Not in acting, Krishna is telling fight only in both cases, in 37 and 38. But in the motivation for fighting, there is a sudden and enormous change. Why is that? Krishna is now taking in the yoga ladder Arjuna one step higher. Till now, he was talking about karma kanda. Now, he is going to introduce the concept of karma yoga, acting in detachment. So, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport how he quotes the same verse which is quoted earlier in the first chapter, that how we are not bound. A devotee is not bound to any forms of obligation. Deva Rishi Bhutap Tandram Pitranam. In the first chapter, he quoted this verse, he quotes it again. So now, Krishna, realizing Arjuna's bewilderment, decides to explain what is happening. Why is Krishna speaking contradictory terms? In the first profit loss calculations, now give up profit loss calculations. So Krishna explains, this is a very important transitional verse in the second chapter to understand the flow of the chapter. Esha te abhita sankhe buddhi yoge tvai maam shrunu buddhya yukto yaya partha कर्म बंधन प्रहास्यसी एषा ते अभिहिता सांख्ये. टिल नाउ आई हैव एक्सप्लेन थ्रू सांख्य. देन बुद्धिर्योगे त्वमिमां शृणु. नाउ आई विल एक्सप्लेन थ्रू द मीडियम ऑफ बुद्धि योग. व्हाट विल आई एक्सप्लेन? बुद्ध्या युक्तो यया पार्थ. व्हेन यू वर्क विथ योर इंटेलिजेंस देन कर्मबंधम प्रहास्यसी. You will be able to break through the bondage of karma. You will no longer have to suffer. Karma bandham prahasyasi. You will break it apart. So let's see what happens. Eshate abhihita sankhe. So now here there are several important terms. There is sankhya, there is buddhi, there is yoga, and there is yukta. So let's look at these words one by one. So now what is Sankhya? Till now the word Sankhya has not been directly, explicitly used in the Bhagavad Gita. Now of course some traditional commentators refer to the second chapter as Sankhya Yoga. So Sankhya basically means analysis, counting. Sankhya is Sanskrit word and Sankhya is counting. So that through which we count. So Esha Te Abhita Sankhya Buddhir Yoge To Imam Shrunu. That now, till now I explained things into Sankhya, analysis. So, explaining, so 2.11 to 30 was the analysis, not the body or the soul. So, counting the elements of existence, so we look at the various elements and then we go beyond those elements to understanding the soul. So, in this way, Krishna talks about Sankhya. After he talks about Sankhya, he talks about Karmakanda, and now he's talking about combining the two through Buddha Yoga. So Prabhupada's purport focuses on many themes. The most important is the clarification of the term Sankhya. We discussed in our Ishopanishad course how there are six different systems of philosophy. So among these six systems of philosophy, one of them is Sankhya. Now, Sankhya is propagated by Kapila. So traditionally, there are two understandings of who is this Kapila. There is a atheistic Kapila and there is a theistic Kapila. Theistic Kapila is actually the Kapila who is talked about in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, especially whose teachings to Devahuti come along. And then there is the atheistic Kapila also, whose teachings are more widely known as the Sankhya. But both teach Sankhya, and our Vaishnavacharya explained that actually the atheistic Sankhya teachings are not actually the in harmony with the Vedic conclusions. So Balde Vidyabhushan explains in his Govinda Bhashya commentary that sometimes even the great sages, though they may be themselves learned in some ways, they come under the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord, and because of that they sometimes speak philosophies which are not in accordance with the conclusion of the Vedas. So the atheistic Sankhya's teachings, atheistic Kapila's teachings are not credited much. They are discounted by the Acharyas who actually explain Vedic wisdom to us. So if you want to understand Sankhya, we have to look at atheistic Sankhya that is taught by Kapila. Now that Sankhya which Kapila teaches concludes in devotional service. After we analyze the world's elements of material nature, then we move forward and try to understand how those elements combine together and how they all help us to move closer to a deeper understanding of reality. Now, in the case of this context, Prabhupada explains that the Sankhya will ultimately conclude in devotional service. Now, what is buddhi? Buddhi means intelligence. So Sankhya is more like analysis. Buddhi is internalized wisdom. Prabhupada will explain in the 10th chapter that intelligence means to see things in their proper perspective. And what is Buddhi Yoga? This term will come again in the 10th chapter in the famous words 10.10. Tadam Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayantite. Krishna explains there how those who serve him lovingly He gives them the intelligence by which you can come to me. So, Buddhi Yoga ultimately at the highest level is the intelligence given by Krishna by which one can return to him. Krishna has not yet referred to himself directly in the first person in the Bhagavad Gita as God. Of course, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha is already there as a reference to him as God, but Krishna has not directly referred to himself as God till now. So, in the context of the flow of the Bhagavad Gita, Buddhi Yoga refers not so much to Krishna as God, but till now, and Buddhi Yoga as the intelligence given by God by which to come to him, but it basically refers to intelligence that enables one to do yoga. Intelligence by which one connects with the deeper reality of life. So, yoga is connection. Buddhi is intelligence. Buddhi Yoga refers here to the intelligence by which one connects with the deeper realities of life. And as the flow of the Bhagavad Gita will move forward, we will understand the Buddhi Yoga in its most complete sense is Bhakti Yoga. So, now here we will have to understand the subtle inner dynamics of the Bhagavad Gita. What do I mean by subtle inner dynamics? Words generally do not have meanings that are frozen permanently in a dictionary. Words have meanings according to their context. So the word Buddhi Yoga, depending on the subtle inner dynamics of the flow of the Bhagavad Gita, assumes different meanings. So as we move forward, as I said in the 10.10, Krishna will explain Buddhi Yoga is the intelligence by which we can come back to him. So that is true, but because Krishna has not referred to himself till now in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has not referred to coming back to himself as the goal of life. So in this context, from the point of view of the flow of the Gita, what Buddhi Yoga means? The Buddhi by which one applies the knowledge that has been given earlier. So, if one understands I am not the body, I am the soul, then what should one do based on that? So, one level is I should not be afraid of death, but I should look for a postmortem destination. What is going to happen to me after death? So, one level of postmortem destination is heavens. But even the heavens are temporary. So higher than heavens is liberation. So if one does punya, one will get heaven. But if one acts detachment, one will get something higher. So Krishna is going to take the discussion to one level higher by telling that, Arjuna, you should act with detachment. So Buddhi Yoga here, in this context, refers to using the buddhi that one gets from Atma Gyan, from the knowledge that I am not the body and the soul, and using that to do yoga. Yoga is to realize the spiritual nature and relish at the spiritual level of reality. So that is not what is done in Swarga, because Swarga also one gets material enjoyment, better material enjoyment, religious material enjoyment, far more long-lasting material enjoyment than what is available here, but still it's material enjoyment, it's not spiritual. So Krishna is telling now how we will combine the two by which one will know how to work without bondage. Karma bandham prahasyasi, you will be free from bondage by this. So, Prabhupada explains the purport that Buddhi Yoga is therefore the transcendental quality of the work that we perform. So, Buddhi Yoga is not just the work, but the transcendental quality of the work. That means the motivation with which we are doing the work. Why am I working like this? Am I working for Krishna's sake? Am I working for my own enjoyment? When I understand that and I act accordingly. Therefore, the transcendental quality of the work that we perform, that is Buddhi Yoga. So then after that, Neha Bhikramana Ashosti Pratyavayo Navityate Swalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. So now this is the way. Now Krishna, when he starts describing what is Buddhi Yoga, first he starts by glorifying it. What are the specialities of this particular way of working? Whatever one attains, that attainment will be internal, eternal. It will be internal and so it will be eternal. Neha bhikrama na ashosti. In this endeavor, abhikrama na ashosti. There is no nash that will happen. So there will be no destruction and there will not be pratyavayo na vidyate. There will be no destruction and no diminution also. things will not decrease also. Svalpam api asya dharmasya. That even if one does a little dharma, svalpam api asya dharmasya, trayate mahato bhayat. One will be freed from the greatest of sinful reactions. Sinful reactions are mentioned over here. Bhaya. But ultimately, all fear is because of the various kinds of sins that we have done and the reactions that we are going to get. That is what is fearful in this world, ultimately speaking. So, what is this referring to actually? Now, Krishna has not explicitly stated over here that the attainment of Swarga is temporary. That he will state later in 9.21. Kshine punye martilokam vishanti. And there, he will more explicitly contrast 9.21 to 9.22, where he says, Ananyas chintayantam, for those devotees who constantly think of him, then yoga kshemam vahamyaham. I preserve what they have and I provide what they lack. So, in this verse, Krishna is not, because he has not talked about himself till now, it's not so explicitly devotional. So there Krishna says, I personally protect for the devotees. But here, Krishna is talking in general for those who are on the transcendental path, that whatever they strive for, it will not be lost. And whatever they achieve, that will not only stay with them forever, but it will save them from the greatest danger also. So, we know Ajamil, he just chanted the name of Narayan once and he was saved from a great danger. So, when we practice spiritual life, we are trying to gain that which is eternal. So, everything else that we gain, we achieve it for a short time and then it is lost. But when we practice Krishna consciousness, whatever attraction to Krishna that we have, will stay on forever, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. We'll have it forever. That's how actually we understand that Krishna consciousness is transcendental. Its gains are eternal. Now of course Krishna is not talking necessarily about Krishna consciousness over here. That's definitely there. But he is talking about the credits of aiming for a spiritual goal. Any attraction that we develop toward the spiritual is greater. Is having a greater long-lasting effect than any attraction towards the material. So, na eha vikramana shosti. That actually, whatever one achieves in the spiritual path, that is never lost, that stays with one forever. And Prabhupada will quote in the purport about how whatever we do in the spiritual life, one it will be to our gain only. And he quotes this famous verse from the Bhagavatam, Pyaktvasa Dharmam. We quoted this similar theme in our Ishopanishad also, how what we do in the spiritual realm stays with us forever. Now let's move forward. And this theme will explore more in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what happens to a person after practicing Krishna consciousness. Even if the person falls away, there is no permanent fall. So first characteristic Krishna describes is that the results will be eternal. But then after describing the characteristic, he describes the qualification. What does one need to possess to actually be able to do this? Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana vaushakha hyanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. So, vyavsayatmika buddhir. One's buddhi has to be one-pointed, has to be fixed. And ekeha kurunandana. At one place. Bahushakha hi anandasya. On the other hand, those people who are not fixed like this and one-pointed, their intelligence is bahushakha. This bahushakha. And how many shakha in fact? Anandascha, unlimited shakhas. For whom? Buddhayo avyavasayinam, avyavasayinam. Those people whose buddhi is avyavasayi, is not fixed in one place. So here we see that Krishna is telling Arjuna that he should become one-pointed indirectly. Not directly telling this, he's just telling by contrast. These people, their intelligence is fixed. These people, their intelligence is multi-branched, and it is dissipated. See, when we want to do something, we have to focus. The more we let our intelligence get splayed, distributed, it gets dissipated. Our consciousness, if we split, I have to do this also, I have to do that also, I have to do that also. So, actually, when desires crowd our mind, then dilemmas cloud our intelligence, when desires crowd our mind. I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. When desires crowd our mind, then what happens? Dilemmas, dilemmas. Oh, should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this? If I do this, this will happen. If I do that, that will happen. Then dilemmas cloud our intelligence. So, cloud means they make it very difficult for us to decide. Should I do that or should I do that? So, therefore, we have to be focused. So, sometimes we feel, I have to do so many things. Sometimes, you know, some people want to travel. And when they want to travel, they want to take their whole house with them in a suitcase. And now if you want to put everything of their house in a suitcase, you know, it appears impossible because it is impossible. Can't put a full house in a suitcase. It's simple to understand, right? Similarly, you know, if we have too many desires, we can't fit all of them in a 24-hour day. It's if we have so many things to do, if it seems impossible, that's because it's impossible. We have 24 hours in a day, and all of us have 24 hours. So if we can't do certain things, we can't do certain things. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just as simple as that. We can't do it. So that doesn't mean we have to give up. Just as when I understand that I can't put everything into my suitcase, doesn't mean I'll not go to travel only. No. Then I have to decide what all should I carry in my suitcase. And then put the first things first. Similarly, when we find that we're getting overwhelmed, there's so many things to do, how can I do them? Then the first thing we have to understand is that I have to streamline, I have to make things shorter, I have to make things clearer, and make my priorities, streamline things. So then, when okay, these things are important for me, let me use these things first. So generally speaking, when we want to practice Krishna consciousness, we have to be ekeha korunandana. To the extent we are one-pointed, to that extent we can practice Krishna consciousness diligently. If we are not one-pointed, then we find it very difficult to persevere in Krishna consciousness. So, Prabhupada's whole purport, it takes a very interesting angle. Prabhupada doesn't focus too much on the purport in the second part, Bahushakha Inantasya. And Ekeha Kuru Nandana, that one-pointedness. So, Prabhupada explains, how do we get that one-pointedness? Now, somebody may say that my one-pointedness is, I want to climb Mount Everest and put my flag over. Somebody may say, okay, my one-pointedness is I want to become the Olympic gold medalist for 100 meter sprint or whatever. So now there are, in any achievement that one wants to do, one needs one-pointedness. You know, in fact, we don't have to be fanatical, but if you want to do anything wonderful in life, we have to be fanatically focused. What is the difference between being fanatical and being fanatically focused? Fanatical means that, you know, one thing, everybody else is wrong. Everybody else is bogus. Everybody else is nonsense. That's fanaticism. But if one wants to achieve anything substantial, one has to be fanatically focused. One has to focus on one thing. You see, when a person wants to become a cricketer, wants to become a good bowler or a good batsman, now they have to spend hours and hours and hours focusing. And sometimes, especially when people want to make it to the top, they train themselves to be specialists. So, if a player wants to become a cricketer, and he says, okay, you know, I'll play a little bit hockey, I'll play a little table tennis, I'll play a little bit chess, and I'll play a little bit cricket also. And I'll become a cricketer. I'll become a world-class cricketer. It won't work. One may have other interests, but there is one passion that has to become consuming, absorbing. Then one will be able to achieve something. That is the meaning of fanatical focus. If, what to speak of only focusing on cricket, one may have to focus on one aspect of cricket. One may decide, I want to become a fast bowler. I want to become a spin bowler. And not just, when people focus, it's not just I want to become a spin bowler. I want to become a leg spinner. Or I want to become a medium pace bowler. I want to become a opening batsman. So, you know, whatever a person takes, even within one game of cricket, people often have this focus if they want to rise to the top. So, same way with our studies. So we can't say that I'll become an engineer also, I'll become a doctor also, I'll become a chartered accountant also, I'll become a lawyer also. No, if I want to achieve one thing, I have to focus. You know, when a student chooses to become an engineer, At that time, the student closes the doors to becoming a doctor. So actually, we understand this with respect to the long-term perspectives of material life. You know, I have to choose one thing to focus on. But the same applies to spiritual life also. You know, we have to become fanatically focused. That means we have to decide, this is what I'm going to do. Nothing else. So, if you want to become devoted, if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, then we have to gain a focus. There are so many things that need to be done in Prabhupada's mission. And there are many things that are important. Krishna wants the whole world to be delivered. And he wants us to become instruments for him. But how do we decide? If we're just sitting, oh, this has to be done, that has to be done, that has to be done, that has to be done, yes. Fine. But a serious devotee is defined by a sense of purpose and a sense of urgency. Sense of purpose, something has to be done. And urgency, something has to be done soon. Something has to be done now. So a serious devotee of Krishna is defined by a sense of urgency and a sense of purpose. And how do we get this sense of urgency and sense of purpose? That Krishna reveals his will through the spiritual master. So Prabhupada took Krishna Swami Thakur's instructions. Share Krishna consciousness with the whole world. Write some books in the English language. Preach in the West. He took these instructions as life and soul. And we know how Srila Prabhupada read Bhakti Vishwanath Thakur's purport on this. Make the spiritual master's instruction as your life and soul. So Prabhupada did that. And we saw that he got such extraordinary success. So now we may or may not be so fortunate to get a specific instruction from the spiritual master. Now the important point is that to recognize that the spiritual master's instructions don't have to be specific and personal for them to become the mission of our life. We have to understand that the general standing instruction which Krishna has given us through Srila Prabhupada is that we all have to become devotees. We all have to love Krishna and help as much as possible others in loving Krishna. So how we do it specifically will vary according to time, place, circumstance. Now, we may or may not know at this stage how we are going to serve Krishna, but if we keep exploring our interests, then when we keep exploring our interests, we will gradually find out. These are the things which I am most comfortable with. Generally, how do we decide ourselves? We feel internally comfortable and we are externally competent in doing that service. So yes, I like doing this and I'm able to do it well. So that's basically the principle of Varanashrama. Varanashrama essentially means that we work on Varana and Ashrama. So according to current ashram which we are in, we do our spiritual duties. According to the Varana that we are doing, we do our material duties. Now in Kali Yuga, determining our Varana may be difficult because there is so much mixing that has happened over the dynasties, over the centuries, over the generations, that it's difficult for us to just, because of the birth family that we are born in, to automatically assume that this is my Varana. Instead, what we should do is, we focus on ourselves with the guidance of senior devotees, discussing what is the service that is best for us. So, the way we apply this instruction is Ekeha Kuru Nandana. We find out that my goal is to become Krishna conscious. That's what we learn from the scriptures. And then we try to find out with the guidance of Krishna and devotees, what is the best way we can serve Krishna while we are in this world and use the talents and abilities that He has given us for His glorification, for our purification, and for the benefit of the world. So this is how we can apply Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Spiritual master's guidance doesn't have to come to us through personal instruction. If it comes, that's wonderful. If it doesn't, then we learn it by studying the Vani and connecting with Krishna internally. And that's how we can also become Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Now the word Vyavasaya is very interesting in this verse. Actually, Vyavasaya also means business. So Vyavasaya Atmika Buddhi means business-like intelligence. A person who is into business is always evaluating things in terms of money. Even if somebody gives a birthday gift, the first thing is, okay, 225 rupees. If somebody goes to somebody's house, his car, 7 lakhs, this. First thought that comes in is the mind is money. So now, that's not necessarily bad. It's just the point over here is to just indicate how one's priorities shape one's perspectives. So when money is the most important priority, then all of one's perspectives become shaped accordingly. And one sees things as money-centered only. So now, similarly, Krishna is saying that just as a person, materialistic person, a business person would see everything based on its financial potential. So a devotee, a spiritualist, should see everything based on its spiritual potential. Vyavasayatmika buddhi, just see according to spiritual potential. Don't see according to anything else. So now why is Krishna suddenly talking about these things? Neha vikrama nashosti and ekeha kurunandana. Krishna is contrasting what he is teaching here with what he has taught a few verses earlier. Until 37 he was talking about the karma kanda level. Now he is talking about the karma yoga level. So this karma yoga level is higher than karma kanda. And that's what he's going to describe in this section. So he's contrasting karma kanda and karma yoga. So let us see how he contrasts. So after describing about karma yoga in 40 and 41, it can be karma yoga, it can be bhakti yoga also. These characters apply to all spiritual paths. Now he starts talking about so this is Prabhupada's purport. Centered on serving the spiritual master. Now Krishna talks about karma kanda. Yamamam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitaha vedavadrataha partha nanyadastiti vadinaha kamatmana svargipara janma karma falapradam kriya vishesh bahulam bhogaishwari gatim prati. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, now you may have heard in the Vedas that actually one can go to Swarga and one can enjoy. And that's what I was also telling you about. That if you think you fight in the war, if you die, you'll get Swarga. That's very good. So aim for Swarga. Krishna is telling here, don't think about such things. Why? Because these are all flowery words. Pushpitam vacham. Yamimam. These words are the words which I myself spoke a little bit earlier, which are often spoken in the Vedas. The Vedas, as we know, talk about Karbakanda. Pushpitam vacham. They are flowery words. And who speaks such flowery words? Pravadanti. Who is attracted by this? Avipaschitaha. Vipaschit means one who has discrimination. Avipaschitaha means one who does not have discrimination. What is the characteristic of such people? Vedavada rataha partha. That such people, they are not attracted. They are Vedavadrataha. They think this is what the Vedas teach. So we had talked about Vedavadrataha in the Ishopanishad Mantra 10, where we talked about the different kinds of avidya. Nanyad asti iti vadinaha. These people think that there is nothing else taught in the Vedas. What is it they think? What are the Pushpitam Vacham? He describes the next verse. Kamatmanah Swargapara. They are filled with kama and their desire is Swargapara. They want to go to Swarga. And what will they get in Swarga? Janma karma phala pradam. They will get janma, they will get an auspicious birth in heavenly planets, and they will get be able to do wonderful karma. And how will they get janma karma? To get that as a phala pradam, they want to do kriya vishesha bahulam. They want to do huge sacrifices. Kriya refers to Vedic sacrifices. Karma kand rituals, vishesh, specialized, for gaining certain results, bahulam, very opulent. And their whole goal is bhogaishwari gatim prati. They are attached to bhoga and aishwarya. So bhoga is sense gratification, aishwarya is opulence. So they want indulgence and they want opulence. So they want sensual indulgence and they want material or financial opulence. And gatim prati, this is their gati. Now Krishna uses the word here, kamatmanaha. So it is as if like kama is their atma. Now sensual desires, lust is their atma. They cannot think of anything better than material enjoyment. Kama atmana swargapara. So because kama is their desire, is their essential being. So it's not that they don't have atma. They have atma, it is eternal. But we discussed earlier how the word atma also is used in the metaphorical sense. It is used to refer to one's essential being. So kamatmahana here refers to what is one's essential being? It is kama. And because their goal is kama, then swargapara. One thing that in swarga I'll get much more enjoyment than what I can get over here. So it's interesting that what is taught in the Vedas itself, Krishna says that is there, but those who think that this is the conclusion of the Vedas, they are avipaschitaha, they are non-discriminating. They do not understand the actual conclusions of the Vedic literature. And that's why there is a progression in the Vedic literature. Multi-level worship is being taught about in scriptures. So, karma kanda is one level, but beyond that higher is jnana kanda, beyond that is bhakti. We discussed, if you remember, the negative axis, the zero and the positive axis. So negative axis is karma kanda, but karma kanda is taking people upwards from the negative axis. Zero is the jnana kanda, where one regains material form and then slowly starts coming to know about spiritual form. And then after that, positive axis is bhakti. It's upasana kanda, which ultimately culminates in bhakti to the Supreme Lord. So in this progression, in this hierarchy, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, the Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. In the Vedas, primarily karma kanda is talked about, but in the Upanishads, one starts talking about bhakti, one starts talking about transcendence. So, here Krishna is actually telling Arjuna, don't aspire for good material results even in this material world. Even in better parts of the material world, what to speak of in this earthly matter, they are all temporary. Prabhupada writes in the purport how some flowers and fruits may appear to be delicious, but internally they may be poisonous. So one has to see, not with the eyes, but with one's intelligence. Similarly, Swarga may talk about sensual enjoyment, but what is talked about in Swarga is actually toxic for the soul in many ways. It's not toxic in the sense that the soul is doing bad karma, but still the soul stays alienated from its spiritual nature. The soul says, forgetful of the eternal joyful life with Krishna. And in that sense, it is unfortunate. So, avipashchitaha. So, those people who do not understand what it is that is to be achieved, they suffer. And after that, Krishna described, therefore, give up this attachment. Bhogaishwari pasaktanam tayapaharita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadhau na vidhiyate. So, bhog aishwarya prasaptanam. When one is attached to bhoga and aishwarya, one is attached to sense gratification and material opulence, then apaharita chetasa, one's consciousness becomes abducted. Krishna has heard Arjuna use the same reference earlier when lobhopahata chetasa. Arjuna is saying actually our consciousness has been abducted by lobha, and that's why we are contemplating killing people like this, killing our own relatives for the sake of wealth. But Krishna is saying this whole calculation in terms of wealth and enjoyment, bhoga and aishwarya, is based on ignorance. And the whole idea, not that we want them and they shouldn't get it, but the whole calculation itself is based on ignorance. So apaharita chetasa. So that material consciousness itself is the base, is actually an indication, a symptom of one having lost one's consciousness to the abduction by material desires. And then once one's consciousness is abducted, one can't think clearly. And then vyavasayatmika buddhi. So what Krishna talked about in 2.41, that one-pointed intelligence is no longer possible. Samadhau na vidhiyate. So when there is no one-pointed intelligence, then that transcendental destination, samadhau, is no longer achieved. So Krishna, by this continuity of thought from 2.41 to 44, what is he saying? In 41, he says that you have to be fixed. But those who are not fixed, they cannot achieve the transcendental destination. Who are not fixed? He says those who are attracted to material things. And therefore, Krishna tells Arjuna in 44 that don't become attracted to material things. Indirectly, he tells them that if you stay attracted to material things, then you will not get the one-pointed determination. This is actually very significant for all of us in our spiritual life also. Actually, you know, we all know how attachments blind us. But we have to ask ourselves, you know, how much do I have to lose before I lose my blindness? How much do I have to lose before I lose my blindness? What does that mean? We look at the example of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra, his blindness was not just physical. It was intellectual, it was spiritual. And that was caused by attachment. And time, so many people tried to give him good advice. But not just Vidura alone. Bhishma, Drona, Sanjay, his own assistant, then Gandhari, then Vyasa, then Maitreya Rishi, all Narada also. If you look at the Mahabharata, so many people gave him good ideas. But he just, his attachment blinded him. And how much did he have to lose before he lost his blindness? It was everything. Now, he lost all his 100 sons. And he lost his dignity as he became old. And as he was doing nothing in his existence, he just was nominally the king. He led all the soldiers, all the attendants in the court would call him, still call him king. But he had no power at all and he lost his dignity because of old age. So Vidura, when he comes along and wants to get Dhritarashtra to cut off his material attachments, he says, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" He says, "Staying in the house like this. Staying in the house like this. What are you doing?" He says, "You're doing nothing but producing kapha all day. And you're going to die miserably. Give up the material attachment. Go away from home." And that is what he does. That is what he does. So, at that time, when he has lost everything that is dear to him, and then his body itself has let him down, then when the words come through of Vidura, they cut through his illusions. So fortunately, we don't have to lose so much to lose our blindness. The consequences of our blindness, of our material attachments, especially the anti-devotional material attachments, we have to use our spiritual intelligence acquired by studying the Bhagavad Gita and Vedic scriptures to cut off those attachments one by one. If we don't cut off those attachments, then we will have to pay for it. And what will be the payment? It will be continuation in suffering, continuation in the misery of material existence. So, how much will I have to lose before I lose my blindness? That's a very good thought for all of us to contemplate in our own spiritual life so that we can become prioritized. So now, apaharuta is a very graphic word. The word apaharuta is used for abducting or kidnapping. So now, when a child is, say, coming home from the school, at that time, some hooligans, some gundas come and catch the child and abduct and take that child and hold hostage, demanding some ransom. So like that, our consciousness wants to go towards Krishna. We are chanting Hare Krishna, we are practicing devotional service, and suddenly kama comes, lobha comes, and tak! Just abducts our consciousness. We want to chant Hare Krishna, and then that is, the consciousness gets abducted. And then our thoughts just go and go towards Krishna. We are in a fantasy world. Oh, if I do this, that will happen. If I do that, that. And then when our consciousness is held ransom, hostage like that, and what do lust and anger demand as their ransom? No, ransom is the money that the kidnappers ask so that they will release the person who is hostage. So what they ask for as hostages, as ransom for the hostages, indulgence. So what happens is, you think that, okay, this desire is troubling me so much. If I just indulge in it, now then the desire will go away. And then I'll become peaceful. Then I can do what I want. So when lust or greed holds our consciousness hostage, then we may feel, oh yes, this is troubling me so much. Just let me get it over, do it and get it over with. So now, if it is within dharmic limits, that's fine. We can do it, but of course within a proper dharmic way. But when it is not, and even when it is at times, if you just give in indiscriminately, then we may get some relief temporarily. But the release is not the same. But we may get relief, but we don't actually get release. What is the difference between relief and release? Relief means there is some trouble and we get some relief from it. Release means we become freed from it. So, if we want release, means freedom, we won't get release and just by indulgence. Because indulgence, when the lust is troubling us, come on, do this. If we indulge in it, then by that actually the desire will become stronger. When the desire becomes stronger, we'll be in greater trouble. And the next time, we'll have more difficulty in coming out. So because the desire becomes stronger. So it's just like the kidnapper, they hold a child hostage. And when they get the ransom, then what they do is, oh, this person is filthy rich. Next time I'll come again and I'll again abduct the child. So the parents will be doubly on guard to make sure that the child never gets abducted like this. So we have to be on guard in our consciousness. Never. I will not let my consciousness get abducted like this. So we have to all be very careful. Otherwise, the mind can take us on a game where lust and greed, they can take us on a game where we just keep paying higher and higher ransoms. And ultimately, we become completely addicted, lost. Where even, what is addiction? Even when we actually pay the ransom, we indulge in it, but within a few moments, the desire comes back again. And at that time, we are terribly entangled. It's very difficult to come out. But of course, we can come out. So, we have to redirect our attachment to Krishna. When Krishna fills our mind, then nobody can abduct the mind. Lust and anger. I am using the words consciousness and mind interchangeably over here because the consciousness is directed toward through the mind. The mind is in subtle body, the root for the consciousness. So, tak, prasaktanam. So, here chetasa refers to the consciousness of the soul which is rooted in the material world through the mind. So, if we fill our consciousness with Krishna and services to Krishna, then presence of Krishna is a deterrent, is the strongest deterrent for lust and anger and greed and other anathas to abduct our consciousness. Just like when the child is there with a strong bodyguard, a very powerful escort, then the thugs don't come over there. Similarly, when Krishna is there with us, then nobody will come. So, in this way, we can keep ourselves safe, protected from these material attachments. But we can keep ourselves protected only when we first of all understand there is a danger. So that is what Krishna is warning. Stay on in material existence if you don't give up your attachment. Because lust and this bhoga and aishwarya, lust and greed will abduct our consciousness. Then Krishna now will tell that Arjuna gets the question, but you are saying all this, but actually isn't all this taught in the Vedas only? You're saying this is so bad, it will lead to attachment, and those who have this kind of views are avivashita, they're not very intelligent, but they are following the Vedas. Krishna says, yes. But we have to go beyond the three modes. Go beyond the Vedic teachings about the three modes. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhava Arjuna Nirvandho Nitya Sattvastho Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Traigunya Vishaya Veda. So the Traigunya is three modes. So the Vedas talk about subject matter which are related to three modes. Nistraigunyo bhava Arjuna. Oh Arjuna, you should go beyond the three modes. Nistraigunyo. And nirdvandvo nitya sattvastho. You should become situated beyond duality and you should be situated in nitya sattva. So then this world there is sattva, there is goodness. The word sattva also means existence. So you should be situated in spiritual existence. Nitya sattvastho nir yoga kshema atmavan. Without any concerns for yoga and kshema. So without any concerns for protection and as Prabhupada says, ideas of gain and protection. So gain is further profit in terms of what we gain further, and protection is in terms of preservation, what we have, keeping it. Don't worry about this. Then you should become Atmavan. The word Atmavan is very significant. What does it mean? Atmavan, like we have Dhanavan. The person who has Dhana is called Dhanavan. And the person who is Bala is called Balavan. One who has wealth is Balavan. So Atmavan, one who is the possessor of the soul. Now what does it mean to possess the soul? Actually we are the soul. So how can we become Atmavan? How can we become possessors of the soul? What it essentially means is that we become spiritually aware. If a person is wealthy, but if the person is intoxicated, that person may not be aware of the wealth also. If a person is born in a very aristocratic family, but the person becomes intoxicated and forgets that. So that person is madandha, is blinded by intoxication. But when the person is freed from that blindness, then the person will understand, actually, this is what I should be doing and this is what I will do. So based on one's understanding of one's position and purpose. So like that, you know, we are all Atmas, but right now we are not Atmavan. We are not acting on the spiritual platform. So when we become spiritually aware, we become spiritually conscious, when our consciousness becomes fixed in the spiritual reality, then we become Atmavan. And what is required for that? Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna. Now three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance, they all keep us in material existence. And we need to go beyond the three modes. Nistraigunyo. And how will that happen? By the knowledge of which Krishna is giving in the Bhagavad Gita about how to practice Karma Yoga. So here Krishna is not specifically telling how to practice Karma Yoga. In the section from 38 onwards till the next verse 46, Krishna basically contrasts Karma Yoga with Karma Kanda. And he is telling over here that when one becomes situated on the spiritual platform, one becomes Atmavan. So go beyond dualities and situated in the Nitya Sattva. Nitya Sattva. Nitya Sattva means there is Sattva in this world, but even Sattva is temporary. Nitya Sattva actually refers to eternal existence. That means transcendence. Situate yourself on the transcendental platform. And what is required for Niryoga Kshema? Don't worry about what you will gain, what you will lose. Stay on the spiritual platform. Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. Be situated on the spiritual platform. So now, Krishna will conclude this discussion of the contrast between Karma Kanda and Karma Yoga with a verse from the, with an imagery, with an example from drawn from the Vedic cultural situation of wells and rivers. Let's look at this example. Yavanartha udapane sarvata sampluto dake tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanataha. So, udapane refers to bodies of water, just small bodies of water like wells. Sampluto dake, when the water is flowing everywhere, as in a river. So, Krishna is telling whatever purpose is served by wells is served by a flowing river. Tavan sarveshu vedeshu. Similarly, the purpose of all the Vedas is served by Brahmanasya vijanataha. By a Brahmana, by a transcendentalist who knows the purpose of the Vedas, that purpose is completely served by first a Brahmana. So what is the point of this verse? The point is, if Krishna told Arjuna that, he's saying that the Vedas talk about three modes, therefore go beyond the three modes. He says, how can, actually one has to follow the Vedic directions, how can I give up Vedic directions? He says, not going up, giving up, you are going beyond. And how does one go beyond? He says that, okay, there are in the Vedic traditional culture, there were different wells. There used to be different wells which would serve different purposes. So a well would be for, say, washing clothes, a well for drinking water, a well for ablutional, other bodily ablution purposes, like that. So when there were wells like that, But if there is a flowing river, because the water in the river is flowing and the water is so much that the various purposes can be served over there, and the water just keeps flowing and flowing and it takes care of those things. So similarly, he says that yes, in the Vedic literature there are different things. Okay, for fulfilling this desire you do this, for fulfilling your desire do that, for fulfilling that desire do that. So there are definitely all these things are talked about in the Vedas. But all the Vedas have an ultimate purpose. That ultimate purpose is to take everyone towards Krishna. And that purpose, if one understands that ultimate purpose, then that person can actually understand why all these different Vedic rituals are there. And he doesn't give them up, but he goes beyond them. The wells are there for the sake of water. In the river, there is so much water. And that water, whatever purpose is there of water, it can be served through the river. Similarly, the Vedas give different injunctions for different specific purposes. But what is the ultimate purpose? Krishna will talk about that in 15.15 when he will say, Vedaishcha sarvair ahameva vedyo. The purpose of all the Vedas is to know him, is to love him, to return back to him. So, Krishna has not, of course, introduced himself till now, but he's pointing that the real purpose of the Vedas is not within the three modes. It is beyond the three modes, and that is what you have to seek. And when you seek that, then you are actually a Brahmana Sivajanataha. You are a Brahmana who knows everything. So in this section, Krishna has contrasted Karma Kanda and Karma Yoga and has described how the results of Karma Kanda are temporary, whereas the results of Karma Yoga are eternal, and how one needs to have one-pointed intelligence as contrasted with a multifocal intelligence. And then he has said that this will take one beyond the three modes towards a eternal destination, Nitya Sattvastha. So, now Krishna, after describing this, in the next section will tell how one can practice Karma Yoga. That we'll discuss in the next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.